Lord's Day to this beautiful crowd. And as always, every time that Ollie and I come back to see you guys, I have to put in how special it is, what a great privilege and honor it is to come here and to speak to you. This is a very attentive crowd. Your hearts come with you as you walk in the door. And that's something that's truly special. Today, I want to talk to you about purpose. Short word, small word, very important. Purpose. If I was to ask you today, when you came through the door to take your seat, if you could give me the definition of what your purpose is in life, what would you write? What would you write? You have to think about that a little bit, don't you? What is our purpose? We have a purpose, don't we? Are we here just aimlessly, randomly, or are we here for a reason? Well, those of us that got up today got up for a purpose, didn't we? Got dressed, washed our teeth, behind our ears, put on our best clothes, and we came here for a purpose. Now, there are other people out there today that when they get up today, may not even have gotten up yet. Maybe they're still getting around to that. But they have a different purpose when they get up today. Not the same one that you had, but a different one. And when we think about this word purpose, it speaks to our very insides, doesn't it? Because for ages, man has wanted to know, why am I here? Who am I? What am I supposed to do? And many people spend their entire lives seeking after some purpose in life. What am I going to do with my life? For some, it's fame. They want to have recognition. They want to have people idolize them. For others, it's fortunes and glory. They're out there trying to get rich. Got to have that money. And they'll stop at nothing to get it. For others, it's seeking after a higher power. And they spend great portions of their lives wandering through the mysteries of all these theories. But anybody that's ever picked up this book and read this book knows that from beginning to end, we see nothing but purpose in this book. This morning in our Bible class, we were talking about the tabernacle and how God wanted it a certain way. You see, there was a purpose for why He wanted it that way. And we saw that the consequences for not doing it that way were quite severe. God is about purpose. We don't serve a whimsical God. We don't serve a God or see illustrated in this book anywhere where God says, I'll just throw something together and sit back and watch and see what happens. That's not what we do. That's not what God does. We serve a God of purpose. And the Bible shows us that throughout the whole thing. So what is purpose? Why is it important? The definition of that's listed in the dictionary.com says that purpose, the defining reason, or the definition of purpose is the reason for which something exists or is to exist, or is done, made, used, etc. The reason that something is made, used, or done, etc. Number two, an intended or desired result. The end, the aims, or the goal. And when you think about it, everything we do in life has a purpose. Whether big or small, the things that we do, from the time we wake up to the time our head hits the pillow each day, we have purpose. And I know what some of you are thinking. Well, I know a lot of people out there that are doing some stuff that doesn't have any purpose to it. Well, how many times have you said, you know, I think I'm just going to go home. I'm just going to put my feet up. I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to do nothing, you say. Well, that has a purpose, too. Even when we choose to do nothing, even when we're there on that couch doing what appears to be nothing, we're serving a purpose. And I tell my wife this every day. And she still doesn't believe me. It's like that little adage that says, if you choose to not make a choice, you've still made a choice. Everything in life is a purpose. Whether it comes to a fruition, a fruitful ending or not. Big or small, our life is about purpose. Now it seems that the bigger the purpose, the more grandiose the purpose is in our life, the more it consumes our life, the more important it is. You see, if I say to myself, my purpose today is to clean that room, I can tackle that and get that done in a few hours. But if I say my purpose in life is to be a movie star, that takes a lot longer to take care of, doesn't it? Might consume my whole life. So the more important the purpose, the more important it impacts our lives and the things that we do. Eventually, what we are in life shows in how we behave, shows in what we do, shows in the values that we portray in how we conduct ourselves. So, if we got up this morning and we had a purpose, what is that purpose? Again, I ask you what your purpose is. What are you going to say? Now, in all fairness, in the beginning of putting this lesson together, I asked my wife, what's your purpose? Now, my wife is smart enough to know now that when I ask her these things and I have my Bible open and my notes open, that I'm working on a sermon, and she's not going to give me just any answer. She's going to think of what I want for the lesson. So she knew I wasn't just saying, what's your purpose? Oh, you got to go to the store and pick some stuff up, get some food on the table. No, no. She knew I meant, what is your purpose in life? And she thought about it. Now, I'm not going to give her exact answer, but I want you to think about that as we go on. Now, we came here today because we serve a higher power than ourselves. And we do that because we have come to a point in our lives, whenever that may have been, in which we have looked at the evidence, looked at the alternatives, seen what our life was without God, and have determined that our lives have no value, that we have no future, no hope without God. That becomes the basis of our purpose, doesn't it? Because when you serve God, the purpose becomes about something else than ourselves. So purpose has importance. And we see it throughout the Bible, from beginning to end, from those opening beautiful lines in the beginning until the closing lines of Revelation. We see God in purpose in everything. In the account of creation, can anyone deny that this account that we have, the descriptions in which it was done, is hanky-panky? Was it helter-skelter? Let's throw a sun up there and some water over here. Systematically, methodically, and perfect order is what we see in the description of God creating everything we see around us. You see, because God is a perfect God. And perfect doesn't make imperfect. So everything was laid out in an orderly fashion, with purpose. And in the course of that creation, we see that we are created by God. We're part of His creation. And not only that, but we're very important to that creation. You see, because out of all the things that were described in that account of creation, only one had on it, made in the image of God. In the image of God was man made. That's how special we are. And so special that in that account, God knew that man, it wasn't good for him to be alone. And so He gave us a helpmate, a companion, a mate in life. And so God created the greatest of His creations, in my opinion. That's how special we were to creation. And of course, as we read through that account, we see that through disobedience, man fell from grace. This perfect world, this perfect system, this perfect universe that God had put in, what did He say when He was done? It is good. Can you imagine a perfect, holy God saying, it is good? That means it was good. It means it was perfect. It means there was no errors, no blemishes, nothing. And then disobedience brought sin into the world. And we discover something in this very first account, don't we? We learn right then that even though He loves us, God cannot abide sin. He's holy, and He can't abide sin. So even though He loved His creation, they were driven away from Him. And the purpose that God put into place when He made all of that had been marred. I think of a painter. And this is why I know that this is a story written by the hand of God, because if this was written by a human, right now, you know that artist would have said, I'm washing the whole thing down. Because it didn't go his way. His perfection was marred. Throw some white paint on it and start over. Did God do that? No. Drove them out. Away from Him. Couldn't dwell with God in His presence anymore. But He didn't destroy us. But the Scriptures say that the descendants of Adam and Eve went out, that sin grew and festered, until we see in the chapter 6 of Genesis. Now it came about that the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Constant evil! These people weren't playing back and forth with conscience. You know, I know that I got to do better, Lord, but they were constantly thinking evil. And the Lord was sorry that He had made man on the earth. And He was grieved in His heart. Let's take a moment to consider that. The great I Am. Holy, holy, holy God. Grieving in His heart that He had done something. He had made a perfect universe. And now He was grieving that He had done it at all. And the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I've created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to the birds in the sky, for I am sorry that I made them. 4 chapters ago, He looked at this perfect work and said, it is good. And now He's ready to blot it out. And yet, we see the love of our God. In that, out of all of this wickedness going on, one man found favor for God. And when you get to heaven, you owe Noah some high fives. Because this favor in man, God took it and saved 8 people. And then we go on with the story of the Bible as it unfolds, this beautiful tapestry that unfolds before us. A man named Abram. Out of all the men that God could have come to, He came to him. And what were the promises that He sat down and made? Promises that would never unfold in his lifetime. Promises that would happen way after he was dead. But he had specific things that this man had to do. And we learn in this lesson, with him dealing with Abraham and his wife, that God sees far, long searching, that his vision is far into the future, and his time is God's time, not our time. Sarah thought she should not be giving any birth to children because she was way too old. She was a grandma. She laughed when God told her she would still bear a son. But in God's time, anything is possible. And we move on. Next, we have Moses. in which at this point in time, centuries down the line from Abraham, the appointed time had come. And God was going to save his people. And he chose a man to do it. And it's almost comical when you see how Moses got in front of him and said, I can't talk. And God just went right over every one of his excuses. Because when he proposes in his heart that you are his instrument, you're not going to walk out of that. But Moses did it. And the tribes were free. And we spoke today of their wandering in the wilderness and the history that follows. And they became established as a great nation. What do we say of David and Solomon and Elijah and Isaiah and Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Ruth? There's a never-ending line of people that were chosen for a purpose. God chose them for a purpose, to work his works and further his divine will. Of course, it all led up to one thing, didn't it? The cornerstone, Jesus Christ. And here we see, full circle, the love of God. Banished out of the garden, forced to live into the world in which God was not there 24/7, having to live with sin, having to put up with it. And we have a lineup of all the things that they had to do. A lot harder to work those weeds now, isn't it? Now that you got brambles and things that are going to hinder you, make it harder for you to till that ground. And women, apparently it was going to be easier to give birth until that incident. And now it was going to be greatly increased in their pains of childbirth. Just living in life carries its own weight. We talk about the weight of sin. Carrying it around with us is what we had to do. And yet God did not destroy us. God did not turn his back on us. And again and again and again, he tried to show his love for us. Now we come to the time in which the ultimate love, the ultimate reconciliation with man, comes in the form of Jesus Christ. And from the very beginning, it was not natural. He wasn't born naturally. He didn't come into the world naturally. And from the time we read the things in the Gospels on Jesus Christ, there is one thing that was ultimately clear. He knew his place, he knew his purpose, and he never stopped accomplishing that purpose. In fact, there's several times in which he says, "We don't have time to mess around here. While it's daylight, we work." Because he knew his time was short. And what about the things that Jesus did? He picked 12 men to be his companions. Why those 12? Why not another 12? Because they had a purpose. Because they had a purpose. He even came up to them knowing their names. How do you know my name? He does. And then even the stories that we read give us lessons on it, doesn't it? How about the lesson of the fig tree? Plays right into what I'm talking to you about today. There's a fig tree, and Christ pointed his finger at it and cursed it, and it withered up and died. And they were, why would you do that? Because it wasn't acting like a fig tree. Because it wasn't being a good fig tree. It's supposed to produce figs, and it didn't. What good is it? You see, if you don't serve your purpose, what are you serving? And make no mistake about it. Everyone in this room today has a purpose. You weren't born in the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries. You were born in the 20th century. And for our young people, the 21st century. Can you imagine that? Why weren't you born then? Because you're born now. And since we serve a God who has purpose, can't we infer that since he uses us to further that purpose, that we have a purpose as well? What makes us any different than those that we've just talked about? What makes us different than that? How do you know that you're not intimately perfect for what God has in mind? Are you allowing Him to use you? Please turn your books to what was our opening scripture reading, which was the 26th chapter of Acts. Because this is where I think is perhaps the best example of the lesson that I brought for you today. Now, to put this into perspective, Paul's on trial. He's on trial and has demanded that he get an audience with Caesar, and they keep shuffling him up the line. And this happens to be the time in which he's in front of King Agrippa. And Agrippa is supposed to rule on him. But we'll see how it happens. Interesting to note that at this point, which we read this account that Paul is going to say again on his conversion, this is now, as we read through the book of Acts, our third time that we hear or get this account. The first time was in the 9th chapter when it actually happened, when Paul was converted. And we read that account of how it occurred. The second time is when he was telling and testifying to the apostles of how his conversion happened. And we read a little bit more. But in this particular time, this third time, Paul is now describing this to Agrippa. And he adds something. He adds something that heretofore we did not read. And we'll get into that. But what it says here, if we read the account. I'll pick it up in verse 4 of chapter 26. So then all Jews know my manner of life from my youth up, which was from the beginning, was spent among my own nation and at Jerusalem. Since they had known about me for a long time previously, if they are willing to testify that I lived as a Pharisee according to the strictest sect of our religion. And now I'm standing trial for the hope of the promise made by God to our fathers, the promise to which our 12 tribes hope to attain. As they earnestly serve God night and day, and for this hope, O King, I am being accused by Jews. Why is it considered incredible among you people if God does raise the dead? So then I thought to myself that I had to do many things hostile to the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And this is just what I did in Jerusalem. Not only did I lock up many in the saints in prison, having received authority from the chief priests, but also when they were being put to death, I cast my vote against them. Remember Stephen. And as I punished them often in all the synagogues, I tried to force them to blaspheme. And being furiously enraged at them, I kept pursuing them even into foreign cities. While thus engaged, as I was journeying to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priest, at midday, O King, I saw on the way a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining all around me and those who were journeying with me. And when we had all fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew dialect, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. We hadn't heard that before. In the two previous times you read this account, that's not mentioned. And it's an important part to it. How many people in this room know what a goad is? We talked about that when I was here before, and we were reading about these things. Simply put, a goad today is like a taser. Okay, a modern day goad is like a taser. It's got a prod on it. And at the end of it is an electrical jolting thing to make the cows or the herded animals go where you want them to go. From the days that this was written, goads came in many different types and shapes. Some of them were nothing more than boards and obstacles put into the pathways that they wanted these beasts to go. That would force them to go where they wanted them to go. These were goads. And they had sometimes sharp instruments on them so the animals would avoid them and go where they wanted them to go. Other times they used sharp spears or pointed instruments to poke the animals into going where they did. But of course in modern day, you don't want to mess up the meat. You don't want to mess up that hide, so we don't poke them. We just prod them along. But it's a goad. That's what that is. You're goaded into something. And simply put, we can see the analogy here, can't we? Because Christ is telling him, Saul, what are you doing? You're making life so hard because you're not going where I want you to go. You're not doing what I want you to do. You're not serving the purpose for which I destined you. And so Paul is converted. And he has a purpose for him, doesn't he? Delivering you from the Jewish people and from the Gentiles to whom I'm sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, in order that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance amongst those who have been sanctified by faith in me. I'm going to send you to the Gentiles. Could this be any more of a horrific situation for Paul? He's a Pharisee. Now he finds out that he's somehow been punishing God. And that God wants him to go and preach to Gentiles. Well, Paul was a little out of commission for a while. Scales on his eyes, blinded, was a major thing. But of course, we know how it turned out, don't we? He took to that as zealously as he had in persecuting Christians. And so here we have all these evidences of things in which the God that we serve uses us, his creation, to further his own purpose. And we use terms like God's plan or divine will. But what we see in all of the evidence in the scriptures is that when God wills it so, it happens. And so what is your purpose? What would you have written on that card? What do you think your purpose is? Now, I understand that as Christians, we begin a service to a higher power. And that by its very nature, as servants of God, we take on a purpose. We have responsibilities. We have the responsibilities of obedience to the Word, to the truth that we take as our own. We have responsibilities and duties to one another. We have duties and responsibilities to the universal church, of which we all belong, and to our local congregation. And I'm not just talking about leading a prayer. I'm not just talking about perhaps serving on the table or even giving a lesson. I'm talking about purpose. What is your purpose? These are things that we all have to do. I asked my wife and she said, love, fear, worship God all the days of your life. Essentially, that's what she said. Most of you would probably write the same thing. And I say unto you, that's amen. But that doesn't tell me what you, Sonny, you, Deacon Derek, Brother Canada, what are you? What is your purpose? Paul had a specific purpose. Jesus Christ had a specific purpose. Or we all just lumped in? We all just have the same purpose? That's silly. One of the things that makes this congregation so wonderful is its diversity. That it's filled up with unique human beings. With diverse backgrounds. Upbringings. That everyone brings here. That's part of the beauty of the church. But part of the beauty for God is that that uniqueness gives Him a crop of people that He can use to further His will. And as we've already seen, He's looking farther down the horizon than we can see. So I ask you, what is your purpose? In 1 Corinthians, and the 1 Corinthian letter, in chapter 6, and in verse 19 and 20, Paul is saying, do you not know that when you were baptized into Christ, you were baptized into His death? Do you not know that you're not your own? You see, when we signed up, when we came out of the water, when we declared to the world our allegiance to Christ, we took on a purpose. But that's not enough. That's not enough. Because there's people in this world that think they have purpose. Right now, down the street and up the street and across town, there are people who think they're serving purpose too. If you were to ask me at this point in time of our lesson, what is my purpose? I don't know. I don't know. And neither do you. Did Paul know? When he's on his way to Damascus, did he know what his purpose was? No. God had to tell him. Specifically, here's what I want of you. He thought he was serving God. He thought he was serving God by killing Christians, rounding them up. That's what he thought. So it's not what we think. When we dedicate our lives to Christ, do we do that? Do we truly do that? You see, we sing some songs out there in our worship to God. And the words from these songs are supposed to have meaning to them. We sometimes sing the song, I Surrender All. If you read the lyrics to that song, it doesn't ever say anything about, well, I'll keep a little bit to myself. I surrender all of me. This is yours, Christ. Take all of me. Do we believe that? Did we surrender all? Or are we holding back a portion? How about have thine own way, Lord? There's a line in that I just love. Thou art the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will. See, that's the attitude we should have. Because we've come to realize that we cannot survive in this world without God. How can we ever fulfill our purpose without God? And finally, how about, Lord, send me. Here am I, Lord, send me. Do we have that attitude? Do we have that? Are we ready? Third chapter in the book of Ephesians, Paul talks about us being soldiers of Christ. Talks about the armor, putting on the armor of God. Are we ready to go? Are we ready for Christ to say, this is my purpose for you? Because if you say, Lord, here am I, send me, you're ready. If you don't think that one person in today's life can make a difference, can make an impact, can have purpose for God, let me end this lesson today with telling you about Charlene Blackwell. Some of you may know Charlene. Sister Charlene attended Milpitas for a number of years. Wonderful sister. I got a chance to pick her up and take her to church at some point in her life, and I got to know her closer. And I remember her telling me a story that when she was working, she worked in an office environment where cubicles and her desk was there. And she was an administrator of some sort. And she remembers that a young man came into her office and noticed that she had her Bible sitting on her desk and mentioned the Bible to her. And she said, yes, I try and read it every day. He said, you know, I was raised a Catholic, but I have for a long time been thinking I needed to really get back in and start looking into that. I was wondering, I was thinking about maybe studying and looking at it again. And she said, well, you should. And if there's anything I can do to help you, let me know. And the young man walked out of her office and she immediately prayed to God, saying, please, God, This soul is knocking at the door. Give him to me. Let me have this opportunity. Let me have this opportunity to study with him. And the next day, the man came back and said, I was wondering if we might find some time that you and I could study the Bible at some point. And she said, absolutely we can. And that started a term process in which she studied. Sometimes away from work, sometimes at work, whenever they had the opportunity. That young man became a Christian. That young man became a deacon in this very congregation. You know him, or maybe remember him, as Elmore Lockenlock. And he went on to become an elder. So don't tell me that one person can't make a difference. Not only was she available, she said, let me, God, give him to me. Let me have my shot. I remember this so much because I was a ball player from 9 years old and I used to just hate being in the dugout. Let me out there. I want to play, coach. That's how we should be for God. We should be ready to serve our purpose for Him. If you think of any of these people I've mentioned today, can you think of any of them? If even one of them had said, nah. Nah, thanks. No thanks, God. I think I'll just go this way. What then? Well, my faith says that nothing stands in the way of God's will, and He would have found a way. But isn't it a contribution to God that the ones He chose did exactly as they were supposed to do? Are we any different? Are we not somebody that could be called upon to further God's purpose just as much as Samuel or David or Paul? In 2 Timothy, excuse me, before I get into that, what we want to finally end up with is that we have purpose in our lives for our families, for our children, for those around us. Responsibilities that require us to be obligated to certain things, our wives, our husbands, our jobs. But all of these things are not our purpose. All of these things don't make up who we are. All of these things don't define us. What defines us is who do we serve? Who do we serve? Do we serve ourselves? Or do we serve God? If we serve God, are we truly ready to stand in if He calls upon us to further His purpose? All of these people did. And you know, since we don't know what our purpose is, how long into Paul's life do you think he said, well, I've done it now. I've covered what God wants me to do. We never finish. God may call upon us to our last breath. Our service doesn't end after we did something good. If that was true, I could have thrown it in a long time ago because I felt good about some of the sermons I preached. But that's not what it's about. Here am I, Lord. What would you have of me? And it truly comes to that. Only at the end of our lives we will be able to say, as Paul said to Timothy in his second letter, 2 Timothy 4. And I've lost my place now. Second Timothy 4, verse 7 and 8. Those famous lines that he used, in fact, they were put under my mom's epitaph for her funeral. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth now there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only me, but also to all of those who have loved His appearance. You see, that's what we do. We serve. We do our best. We're standing at ready, as soldiers are. Not soldiers that deal with death, but soldiers that bring life and light. But soldiers have to stand ready to serve at any time. Boop, boop, boop. The sirens go off. They got to be ready to go. Are we? Because that's the message behind purpose. We have a purpose. We serve a purpose. And we need to know what our purpose is. We need to be prepared for what God would have of us. Of course, we've already preached many, many different sermons on what it takes to be prepared, what it takes to be equipped, to have our ammunition belt filled to the max with all of the things that we know should be there. But the fact of it is that if you read the Bible, you study the Word, you pray to God, and you have faith in Him, that He will guide you, He will lead you, and He will use you for His purpose. What is your purpose? Give it some thought as you go about your day and your week, because it's important. It's important not only to yourselves, but to God. For what would it be if you got to the end of the line and you went to that great day and God said, you know, if only you had been here for me when I needed you. And you're waiting for, welcome in, good and faithful servant. Yeah, but there was this time when I needed you and you weren't there and I had to go and find so-and-so. That's not what we want. We're to be here, ready. Lord, send me. And if you're not ready, get ready. Make your purpose in life the ultimate service to God. And for those of you in our audience today, that you haven't taken that step, that you haven't placed your hope out there. Well, this means that you're still trying to think it through yourself. Paul thought it through himself, didn't he? He came to the conclusion that the right thing in life was to kill God's servants. So you see, if you're going at it on your own, if you're going at it with, well, my heart will lead me, probably going to lead you to a wrong place. You need the hope and truth and light of God in your life. And the first step to doing that is to come forward confessing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That you believe that God came, God sent Him to this earth for a purpose. And that purpose was to be a sacrifice on the cross for you and I. The acceptable sacrifice that God said would cover all sins. And as we've already stated, you can take that first step in your life by coming up here and being baptized into Christ, coming up out of the water, sinless. Sinless as a baby. That first step is your purpose in life. Your first step to taking your purpose. And you can have that. Along with the love of Christ, the love of your God, and the love of all these wonderful hearts that will assist you in every way possible. Is that not something better than the world offers you? Is that not something better than the person down the street might be able to offer to you? It's the best offer that mankind could ever have. The invitation, come unto me, all that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Answer that call today. Answer it now as the opportunity is here. Don't put it off until tomorrow because God's purpose begins today. And you don't know what role you play in it. Become part of His purpose today. When we sing this song of invitation, come down that aisle and make known what you would like to do in your life. For those of you that may have stumbled, that may not be keeping up with this promise, this purpose that you have already entered into, you have that as well, an opportunity to come and ask for the prayer. Ask for God's forgiveness and for someone here to assist you in whatever way we can. In however you might be subject, we ask that you do so at this time as you stand and sing this song of invitation.